Welcome to Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and NVIDIA, where innovation meets real-world impact in high-performance computing.
Welcome back to another riveting episode of Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Max and NVIDIA RTX GPUs. I'm telling you, this is going to be a rough episode. I never have Cindy on because she's absolutely disruptive to my creative process. And we're here. So today we have special guests, Cindy's partners. I probably won't do much of the talking, but we're going down an M&E path today, talking about creative artistic design things that I completely don't understand. So I can't think of anyone better to have on this episode than Cindy and her partner. So Cindy, please introduce your partners and kick it away.
Hi, Cindy Olivo, and I'm here with the lovely hosts of Mermaid. Lauren and Whitney, do you guys want to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about Mermaid?
Okay, so I'm Whitney Paulette, and I am a host for Mermaid. I'm also the founder and CEO of Pixel Studios. We work in toys and animation, concepting and prototyping, and it's really fun. But our passion project is Mermaid, which I'll get a little bit into, but Lauren can really nail it. I'm so bad at explaining what it is. But basically, it's an online drawing challenge where millions of artists participate and draw mermaids every single day for the month of May.
I think you hit it. Like, that's the bare bones of it. That's what it is. It's an online community where we all draw mermaids and share our love for creation and mermaids and mystical things.
So why mermaids, I guess, why mermaids is my first question. And then, like, who's the brainchild behind this?
Oh, okay. Well, mermaids... Why mermaid? Well, we got to start at the beginning. Who started it? Because that it kind of explains why mermaids, right? With the creator, the founder of Mermaid is Tom Bancroft. He is an ex-Disney animator. He's the creator of Mushu, and he did all of the cool Renaissance Disney animated movies back in the day. But he didn't get to work on The Little Mermaid. He was an intern, and he missed that one. So later on, years go by. It's 2016. And he decided he wanted to draw mermaids that were inspired by his teenage daughters. And it went viral in the time. And it happened to be in May. And then he decided to make it a challenge. He's a teacher. He teaches animation at Lipscomb University. And so just teaching is in his nature. And so he thought, let's make this a challenge. Let's invite the community, the art community of the world to draw mermaids. And then he created a prompt list, which is essentially just a list of words that can inspire artwork. And there's one for every day. And you can draw mermaids every single day if you want to, but you don't have to. But really, it's just to get people going and get people, you know, get their creative juices going. And yeah, that's why Mermaid, I think it happened in May, and it was just like a punny tight, like a title of May, like Mermaid, just bit.
It's so cute. I remember the first time I saw the hashtag, I immediately, as an artist, was like, oh, I want to do that, you know, and I saw everybody just drawing mermaids, and it made sense because it was like the beginning of summer. We're all like, you know, getting excited to go to the beach. So it just was, such a magical time. And then years went by and everybody was doing it. It just kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then Tom started his own animation studio called Pencilish. And he was having a hard time keeping up with it, you know, because it really did require a lot of reposting. And we had a few partners at the time that were gifting prizes. And we were also finding judges that were really, really incredible in the animation industry. And they would then, you know, look through all of the work that was being shared online and ultimately vote for the ones that were really standing out to them for various reasons. But we had an animation category and an illustration category. Tom was like, this is amazing. I love it so much. I just can't keep doing it. So he asked me and he asked Lauren to host it. And so we've been doing that for the last 4 years, I'd say. And then we brought, we didn't bring, Cindy came in. Cindy, you have been such a huge supporter. Dell has been such an amazing partner for Mermaid. And honestly, it's been so much stronger and so much more exciting since you guys joined us. And it's also helped us so much too, because you guys have introduced Dell into our workflows. And it's actually kind of changed for me, at least, like the way that I design toys. So it's just kind of like holistically helped us in so many ways. But in the world of Mermaid, it's been really inspiring. So thank you guys.
Oh, thank you. We are happy to help. It's one of my favorite, you know, activations that I support. Lauren, you said something really interesting. You said Renaissance Disney. For the listeners, explain what that is. What is Renaissance Disney versus today Disney, I guess? What is the golden age?
The golden age of Disney? Well, there was a point in Disney history where the animation studio was not as successful as the parks. Is that what it was? I can't remember. It wasn't.
I think so. Kind of like took their eyes off of animation.
Yeah. And then he came in and he did
Katzenberg.
Yes, Katzenberg. Thank you. My gosh.
Ding, ding,
okay.
Ding, woo.
Yes. We got there originally. We got there eventually.
Yes.
But yeah, Katzenberg came in who originally did live action films and then was turned off by animation. And then he fell in love with it and really took the cinematic live action approach to things, and like his involvement in the work that was being made during that time changed how we made movies. And that was the popular, what we think of like Aladdin, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, those movies, Lion King, Mulan, I could go on and on. All of those movies that I guess people our age remember. We remember that as the golden age of Disney. Renaissance, when it came
Aladdin.
Back.
So good.
Aladdin, yes. Yeah. The introduction of celebrities doing voice acting work was during that time too, which was like a new-ish sort of thing. So
you're a toy designer, Lauren. You've got this huge presence online. You do all of your fun draws. I would love to kind of have the audience learn a little bit about what you're doing. And I see a lot of your work behind you. So if you could kind of tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you do.
A lot of other work. There's all over my ceiling too, but I collect
your
all
ceiling.
My...
You added it to the ceiling this.
Well, I have. Gosh. I have it on this. Yeah, it's because I have so many friends now that like send me work, and I always, because Mermaid, I'm so involved in the community, and I really want to help artists. I will buy a bunch of prints that really meant a lot during that specific Mermaid. So I have like a bundle of Mermaid prints every May that I buy from artists and put in my office. But I am a character designer and illustrator, and I am chronically online. That's what I like to say. And I just fart around on the internet a lot. And that's why my tagline is I'm a fartist, because I make fun art, or fart is the way I like to say. And originally I just started, I really wanted to engage with my community. And so I would draw one of my followers every single day, and I would do it in the morning while I drank my coffee, and it became this thing called coffee draws. And I did that for 200 days. So a lot of these pictures you see on the back of my wall here are my followers. And so I did that. And then I started drawing their pets, and I started turning them into superheroes. And I just really engaging with my community and seeing what they liked. And then I one day decided to draw my followers' pets as people. What would their person characters look like? So my series Pets to People blossomed, and that kind of went crazy all over TikTok and Instagram. And I'm still doing that. I work as a character designer and illustrator. I'm a Disney Lorcana artist for their trading cards. So is Whitney. And they worked in kids media, like children's television, concept art. And I worked with Pixel on a couple of fun toy projects. So I do kind of a lot of everything. But Mermaid is like my happy place.
I'm waiting for you to bring back Burned Out Betty, because she was like, I think everyone resonated with Burned Out Betty.
Whenever she comes up, I'm like, oh no, is Lauren okay? But also I love her. We have all been her.
Yeah, I don't have, so a thing on the internet, a lot of digital artists will have original characters, and I don't have a lot of original characters. I have one original character, and she only comes when I am burned out, and her name is Burnout Betty. And the song Johnny Walker, what is it? I think it's called...
That one?
It's like Dream Walk or something by Johnny Walker. I can't remember that song, but it's always that song, like, woo, woo.
You're just like, in a daze.
Yeah, like, oh, my gosh.
What day is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually she makes an appearance midway through Mermaid, usually, because again, we have like
I'll bring back Burnout. I'm like, guys.
Thousands of posts. Like, if you go to the Mermaid hashtag, and we had to change it up. So instead of it just being hashtag Mermaid, we did Mermaid 2018, 19, 20, 21, 20. You know what I mean? So, like, we had to separate it by year because everything was just kind of getting lost. And you can look at, like, what, 2025, we had, I can't remember how many we had.
I don't remember either. We can.
It was a lot. It was
tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. Yeah. And we're trying our best to see them all. Cindy knows because she was a judge last year and this year.
My eyes are insane. I saw mermaids in my sleep. Everybody's number one fan. It was great.
Yeah. Your eyes do go cross. You know, like, yeah, I don't know. There was a time where I was just constantly scrolling so much that I felt like my world was like also just kind of going
up the tunnel.
Whitney and I always talk about how every May we're like, we have seen every mermaid that could possibly
every kind of
be
mermaid. Made. Sure there are new ones out there, but
I'm still like, I mean, there was that manatee hairy mermaid this year that I was so obsessed with. It was my favorite.
They remember this mermaid. Some of them really do stand out. Like, they're vivid. Like, yeah. Even though we have so many submissions, there are every year, like, four or five people cut through. And that's how we find the winners. And all of the judges, we don't talk to each other. We just save our favorite ones. And then at the end of the month, we submit our top five. And they're always duplicates. And people who participate, you know, there are some people who are like, how could you possibly pick a winner? And it's like, it's just the dupes, you know? Like, we can't help but feel connected or drawn to somebody. And then it's just really funny how all of us can all find the same people.
So Whitney, you have been on this like 3D journey. So when I first met you, you know, you mentioned that was something that you were looking and you were more interested in kind of getting into. So tell us about that. Tell us kind of where you started with it, kind of where you're at now and how I guess Dell helped you with that.
Oh my, I'm so happy to tell you about it. So I'm a toy designer and I work in toys and animation. And, you know, oftentimes it's like the showrunner will come up with a script and say, here's this script for this new show that's coming out. Can you design some characters and then make them toyetic? And toyetic is a word we use in the toy industry to make it, you know, good for play. You know, how would a child play out this character in their everyday life? So I'll come up with a concept design for those characters and for the toy. And then I'd usually hand it off to a 3D artist to then sculpt it. And I went to school for digital media. I learned 3D and I just hadn't really used it in the longest time. So I just didn't really have to. And then when Cindy presented us with the Dell Precision 7680s, it was like totally jacked. Like this computer was like so loaded. And I'm like, how could we ever demonstrate the power by, you know, just drawing? You know, like maybe there's something that we could do that's a little bit more intense. I thought, let's sculpt something, you know? And so Lauren and I collaborated on this idea where she'll design a mermaid and I'll sculpt it. And then I'll 3D output it and we can see it in real life. And it would be just a really great way to, you know, try out how powerful this computer is. But also, you know, I got to relearn how to sculpt again, which is something that I have been really, really wanting to do. So we did that and it ended up becoming a way bigger project than we ever expected. You know, the character turned into a pen holder with this like really great base and her arms over here like this, and she can hold your digital pen. So it kind of worked really well for our mermaid audience since a lot of us are digital artists, but also she can hold your paintbrush, your pencil, whatever it is. I have one somewhere. I'm going to go bring her over.
Oh, I have one of the prototypes. Can I bring my prototype?
Yeah. Grab the prototype and I'll grab the resin one. Hold on. I'm 2 seconds. It's right here.
My prototype is my favorite because this one I had to go through TSA pre-check and they took it apart and broke her.
No way.
Yes.
Dude, they're monsters. Monsters.
I know. She had it all wrapped up beautifully and then TSA pre-check had a little sign telling the story when he was so depressing. Oh, yeah. So I brought the first prototype. It was the first output that I ever had of a 3D printer in my office over there. And I was so excited to give it to Lauren, given that she was the original designer of Lily. And I opened my suitcase and the latches that, like, you know, attach inside are broken. And I'm like, oh, no, what happened in here? And then I pull out Lily and she's broken in half. And I'm like, oh, no, she broke. And then I see this little paper that's also in my suitcase. And I'm like, how'd this get here? What's this? And it says customs was here. It's like, yeah, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, no drugs in here, but we thought maybe. You know? So.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't have hair at this point.
Mine does.
Yeah. This is a prototype. This is the beginner one. We're trying to figure out how heavy she, you know, she was and stuff. Which, by the way, just now, I wasn't sure what I just said. Did I say TSA pre-check?
TSA pre-check?
Did I say that?
TSA. I don't know.
I am not.
Anyway, so it was TSA. Better. We knew what you meant. Yeah. So anyway, this is Lily. This is what she ended up becoming. And she had two interchangeable hairstyles. It was cute.
She's adorable. What software did you use to sculpt Lily? And, you know, I know that you were using, you know, some other hardware beforehand, and then you got the Dell. And I think it was really that GPU that allowed you to kind of start this journey and kind of, you know, getting back into 3D. But what softwares are in this 3D kind of ecosystem?
So I fully use ZBrush, Maxon ZBrush, who then eventually became a partner also because they saw the Lily project and they're friends with Cindy. And Cindy's amazing. Just this great collaborator.
Collaborator. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's right, Logan.
That's right. Nailed it.
So yeah, we use ZBrush and I don't know. I can't think of anything else really.
Mm-hmm. Well, you obviously use Adobe, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Did you go to Adobe Max?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Adobe Photoshop to paint.
Okay.
And to design. And then trying to think of the painting program that I've been using recently that I used on a later Lily. It's Adobe Substance. It's sick. I'm really enjoying it. But yeah, I would say that like this introduction to all these new softwares that I've been wanting to use and explore all started when I got the Dell Precision. It was like this great catalyst. So it was cool.
Hey, Lauren, Whitney, you did a great job going through the softwares you use in your workflow. Do you use anything, use the same stuff that Whitney uses software-wise? Do you employ other softwares? Which one's your favorite and why?
Adobe Photoshop is what I would use. I don't sculpt. I'm hoping to get into that and learn how to sculpt. I'm real beginner though, so I have to start at the very, very, very basic right now. But I'm just Adobe Photoshop at the time.
Just Adobe Photoshop.
She's
okay.
Killer in Adobe Photoshop. Truly the most incredible illustrator, and she's so fast, you guys.
Lauren, I can definitely help you with the Unreal stuff, so let's talk about that. You know, the outsider in, looking in at kind of, you know, this M&E world and all of the fun things that we do. Now, I know that AI, and you're our AI guy, AI is still kind of a touchy subject in this space. You know, Lauren, Whitney, how do you guys see the future?
Well, let me ask you the first question. Is that obviously you both are way more creative, way more got it going on, like creatively than I just don't have that skill, right? Like, don't have the skill. What you guys do cannot be replicated. I totally get and appreciate it. Now, with AI, you mentioned kind of Adobe Substance, right? It does have some AI bits in it. I guess first question, in creative process, what is your kind of opinion on AI? We'll start there. We'll start with Whitney and go, Lauren, what's your thought about injecting AI into the creative process? Do you think it's a help? Do you think it's a hindrance? Do you think it, you know, is kind of depends on the user itself and how they're utilizing it? Where's your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to get into. I'll say dig into, because it's like on the surface, and if you go under, it's like, oh my gosh, like, you know, how does this affect so many artists? And, you know, scraping the internet to find the style to then, you know, generate this, like, it's scary, you know. And I think like on the top of it all, on the surface, it's like a really great inspiration tool, you know. And I think that, you know, when clients send me AI generated reference and they say everyone internally has already really agreed that this color palette's great and they like this general style, you know, but can you interpret it in your own way using, you know, X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm so glad that we didn't have to go back and forth so much. Now you guys have a general idea. And of course, I'm going to completely redo it. But I have, you know, a vibe. And so I think that when there's AI gen art that's used for inspiration, it can be really helpful and time saving. Having said that, the fear I have and have been having lately is that people aren't going to be feeling like they need to be creative anymore, you know. And I'm seeing a lot of people just, you know, jumping straight into AI, you know, whether it be ChatGPT or Gen AI, to just get everything going, and then that's what they end up using. There's no interpretation, you know. And I'm scared for the future. Like, I personally absolutely love creating, and I do it for therapy, you know what I mean? I always have as a kid. So I don't think that's ever going to go away. But in terms of my work and what I do, you know, creatively and career-wise, I don't want it to overshadow and overtake, you know, the work that we do. So I am a little leery, I'd say.
Okay. Lauren, I'm assuming thoughts are similar.
Yeah. No, I have the same. I'm worried about the value of our skill. I'm worried about it being devalued. I do agree with Whitney. My one positive, I guess not one positive, but just a positive, I will repeat what you said, was that clients are very clear about what they want now. There was, you know, before maybe you would spend a week or 2 weeks on a project, and now it's much more concise, like 2 days, 3 days. I'm getting a lot of day jobs, which I hadn't had before. My first job was like 6 months, and then I'd be on like commercial projects for like a month, and now they're a week, 4 days, 2 days, like a day. It's not great when it, but I mean, the more, it means more, right? Like if the client can create more and has more time, then they can come back for more. But it makes it less frustrating in the process of knowing what your client wants, right? There's always that point in the beginning when you're working with a client where maybe the client doesn't quite know what they want yet. And you kind of have to go back and forth for a long time and iterate a lot, just throw spaghetti at the wall until something hits. But with AI, maybe they can come to me with something more clear, which saves a lot of time.
This just reminded me. So I actually got a client that sent me so much AI generated reference that I had no idea
what it was. That's hilarious.
So it's like, I guess it just depends on the client. Because sometimes too many options are still a problem, you know.
That's true.
It's a wild world out there. And I really appreciate this question. I'm glad that we got to answer it. And I think we could talk about this forever. But I would say that for Mermaid, in regards to that, we don't allow AI because, again, it's a celebration of creativity and the artist behind the art.
I might sneak in an entry, an AI entry next year.
And see if we can catch it.
See if you can catch it from some random person. No, I'm kidding. I'm not artistic. I agree with you. I think ripping off content and stuff like that. But from where my angle, where my head is at, is that it was interesting the point about how the clients come to you with like AI generated stuff. And it's like cutting out that, you know, couple of weeks where it was like the iterative back and forth brainstorming, you know, type thing where they have a more formed idea. That's kind of interesting. For me, it's still, and I don't know if you've used tools like Compy and other things, but I'm not artistic. I get out a bad prompt because I don't know line density, shading, color gradients, all these fancy things that you all know. Like, I don't know it. So when I get something out, it's still junk. But when I have like my partner, Julian, when he prompts, he's an artist, very good stuff. And it's interesting because I kind of worked with an animation studio where they were like, hey, can you take our collective book of work that we've done animating over the last 25 years and do the characters and then train a lore model for us to be able to storyboard very quickly.
Yeah.
Yes. So in that type of use case, I think it makes sense. But no, should people be stealing your work to train models and stuff? Absolutely not. But for a way to kind of get started and like accelerate the process and allows you to be a little bit more creative. Yeah, we'll see. But you're right. It just depends on how you use it. It's like any tool at the end of the day. You know, a butcher knife can be used for good, cutting meat.
What does the future look like? Obviously AI is not going to go back in the box. So what's kind of the happy medium? You know, what is good going to look like for artists in the future?
I have an answer for this because I just read an article about this before, like 30 minutes before we had this chat. There's a company called Animage that do you remember that company? Whitney and I went to Kids Screen last year. It's a conference for kids media. And there was a Brown Bag Studio, I think it was. Was it Brown Bag Studio? And Animage had partnered together as a startup. I think I'm recalling this from our trip at the beginning of the year. So take this with a grain of salt. But Animage and Brown Bag did a panel discussion about their partnership together. And Brown Bag has invested a lot of money in Animage and working with them and trying to feed their models the style of artwork that they've been producing to streamline their pipeline, like their workflow. And similar to the work that you were talking about, Logan, about being able to storyboard, and eventually they want to be able to do storyboard to animation, like sketch to anime is what they referred to it as. And they had all of these, you know, great things that have already been developed with the software. When you're training using IP that was developed in the studio and working with an AI augmented company like Animage, like working in conjunction that way, I think that it's ethical and interesting. At the time of Kidscreen, I don't think that it was reaching its full potential at that time. The models were still learning to be consistent. And I don't remember. I don't remember the specifics of it. But I did just read an article that Disney has partnered with them now. So it's not just Brown
Bag. They invested in it. They had an incubator program. So they chose like 3 companies to invest in, and that's one of them. Yes. So they truly believe in it. Brown Bag and now Disney are exploring this. And I've seen it. I've seen it. And it's actually very cool. So like, say an animation studio does an orthographic of their character. It's like front or even the front. It's like here's just like a front and a side. And then they plug it in. And 2D entirely,
just a 2D front. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So instead of having an artist, you know, do every single drawing of every single angle and then you hand it off to a 3D sculptor, they go ahead and do the sculpting. And then, you know, everything's like, you know, tweak until it like kind of looks right. This will then go ahead and just get like, say, half of that work and then fill in all the holes. And so it would be a huge time saver. And yeah, I think it would be amazing to be able to crank out, say, like 5 incredible shows a year rather than 1 every 2 years, you know. I think that's really exciting. That's really interesting. I just think as long as there are the right minds behind it and they're creating really quality content that is beneficial to especially children, I think it's really interesting stuff. Yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes.
That's a good question. I mean, I'll throw out my services. I'm pretty good with AI. If either one of you wanted to create a Laura model of all your past work to help iterate your creative process, I would be more than willing to do it for you. We're getting kind of close to the end, so you, Whitney, Lauren, and I'll give you both each a minute. Let's pretend that someone hasn't watched the last 33 minutes. You know, give them kind of the 1-minute spiel about Mermaid, what you do, and why it's important, and why they should follow you.
So, yeah, thanks for listening. If anyone's just joining us right now, I'm Whitney Paulette. I'm a toy designer. I work in animation and toys. I also am a host of Mermaid, and Mermaid is what we're all here for. It's an online drawing competition, and we have millions of submissions of artists who are all so passionate, so incredible, who love mermaids. It takes place in the month of May. We will all be at Adobe Max this year, so please come and join us. And that's me. That's that on that. Go ahead, Lauren.
Sure. Okay. Thank you for listening. And my name is Lauren. I'm a character designer and illustrator in the animation industry, and I'm also a co-host of Mermaid, the drawing challenge that happens primarily on Instagram during the month of May, where we all draw mermaids during the month of May. And yeah, that's us. We'll see you on the internet and we'll see
you. See you on the internet. Good to see you, Comfy Max.
Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. No, this was great.
Lauren, Whitney, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of
It's Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Max.
There you go. I'm really excited about all of the future mermaids and all of the things that we're collaborating on. You guys have been an absolute dream to work with. So really excited about what's to come.
Oh, the feeling is so beautiful.
We love you.
With that, thank you for watching. This is Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Max and NVIDIA RTX Pro GPUs. Till the next time, keep your workflows running locally on Dell Pro Max and NVIDIA RTX, and we'll see you on the next one.
This podcast was produced in partnership with Amaze Media Lab.